Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. It's the evening of the fourth day, Kaf Hei B'Chodesh Teves, Parashas Va'era, Tavshin Ayin Vav, the evening of the third day, Tuesday, 5 January 2016, webcasting from either occupied Palestinian territory or the West Bank or Judea, origin of the word Jew. To begin with today, yet another normal day in the history of the human race, in which, as usual, some people are spewing Jew hatred. As stories go, this is a virtually unimportant one, real sideshow, but I think it is by its very ordinary nature, a gem for being a specimen containing the genetic code of anti-Jewitis in our time in its purest form. Yesterday, a UN official living in Israel for 2 years has quit his post in frustration. His title was Special Rapporteur, the Special Investigator of the UN Human Rights Council, the UNHRC, which should be the UNHRC-FEJ, the Human Rights Council for everyone except Jews. Mr. Makim Wibusono of Indonesia resigned because Israel has reneged on a pledge to grant him access to the West Bank and Gaza. He is the Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights Situation, whom Israel has not allowed into the West Bank and Gaza, so he could not perform his official duties. In his letter of resignation, he said, quote, he voiced deep concern at the lack of effective protection of Palestinian victims of continuing human rights violations and violations of international humanitarian law. He said, quote, unfortunately, my efforts to help improve the lives of Palestinian victims of violations under the Israeli occupation have been frustrated every step of the way. It is with deep regret that I accept the premise upon which I took up the mandate, which is to have direct access to the victims of the occupied Palestinian territory, will not be fulfilled, close quote. Israel wouldn't let him get to where he wanted to go. You all get the picture. Israel prevented this man from the largest in population Muslim country on earth from entering Judea and Samaria and Gaza, while not even pretending to be even-handed, to be objective. He was shamelessly already decided that there are such violations. That was his mandate. This character, who did nothing for 2 years, collecting a comfortable salary, arrived here with a mandate not to investigate the possibility of human rights violations by Israel. That was a given. That was the unexamined premise of the project. It was, in other words, yet another psychodrama in which the Jews are guilty of inhuman behavior. They perpetrate inhuman abuse of the Palestinians, but curiously, in the minds of anti-Jew goyim like this UN flunky, the Palestinians are never guilty of human rights violations against the Jews, like, for example, murdering us all the time in terrorist horrors. Yesterday, a wild ass of an Arab man tried to stab a young Jewess and a Jewish man in Jerusalem. And this morning, again, Israeli warriors had to shoot dead like a rabid dog, a rabid wild ass of a man, who tried to run soldiers over at the Gush Etzion Junction and then jump out and try to stab them. Well, not for the first time. Another Muslim maniac was shipped off to Muslim paradise. Being arguably, I think, a human rights violation big time, arguably about the biggest, this attempt to take life. And here is this Muslim flunky on the UN payroll waving the flag of human rights violations committed only by Al-Yahud. The ancient ones never commit human rights violations against the Jews. Sort of like a stroke victim who loses not only the use of one side of his body, eventually, as I understand it, they lose the very idea of there being another side of the body until reminded there is one. This guy is a representative of the de facto government of the world, who is inert. He's dead to Jewish suffering. And the injustice and inhuman treatment of Jews dealt by the Arabs here. Like a stroke victim with only half a brain, he is insensate to what horrors the Muslims commit against us. And in this, he's a fine example of the still very powerful state of mind known throughout history as Jew hatred, which commonly includes hallucinations of Jewish devilry that are just that, hallucinations. And in this case, it is the charge of chronic abuse at the hands of Jews whose cruelty never ends. As they crucified Jesus, they now crucified the Palestinians, that ancient nation whose homeland as old as time was stolen from them by Al-Yahud, whose cruel, lawless Jews won't give it back. This is the psychodrama at the UN, acting out age-old Jew hatred and fear of the Jews and belief in the evil guilt of Jews. This is what the United Nations Human Rights Council is all about. Its 47 member states spend their time on no human rights issue in the world like the question of Palestine that is discussed every time a council convenes, once a month. Of course, the session with an already predetermined list of agenda items to take up, it's a list that changes from time to time, from meeting to meeting, except for the question of Palestine, which is a permanent agenda item, as no other human rights issue on the globe is a permanent agenda item. That says something, I think, about these 47 goyim, these 47 nations, and what they think and feel about Jews. I find it fascinating that not one of the 47 ever pipes up and says, hey guys, don't you think we're spending too much time on one human rights situation versus all the others in the solar system? Of course, it never happens. And that it never happens speaks volumes. It also makes the Jews living in Judea smile, this one at least, because it's further proof of the truth of Jewishness and the truth of the God of Israel. I sometimes think that he and the angels can't stop laughing at the behavior of mankind in general, and in particular these dimwits in the council, who commonly sneer at the Jews for calling themselves the chosen people without being conscious of their own herd mentality that willy-nilly has them responsible for treating the one Jewish state in the world as the chosen state. Chosen, if not by a supernatural deity, but other people just like themselves. We are receiving unique, hostile treatment, but these idiots don't see themselves as the choosers of our chosen status. I also found interesting the coverage of the resignation of this resentful UN Muslim freeloader by the Reuters correspondent, anonymous as usual. As filler in such articles, such journalists fill in their potted histories that are uniformly more eruptions of anti-Jewitis of the mind, but have become so common people aren't even aware of it. This writer explained to readers that, quote, Israel captured the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem in the 1967 Six-Day War, and later annexed the latter, declaring it part of its eternal indivisible capital, a move never recognized internationally, close quote. Think of that. Here we read about the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem that are three geographical designations invented during the Arab War against Jewish freedom in our homeland that we brought back to life. Before 1949, there was no such geographical place on earth called West Bank, no Gaza Strip, no East Jerusalem. All three names, products of the timeless Arab War against the reborn Jewish state. Each place name intended to deprive the Jews of the real estate so named. In 1947, the UN drafted the partition plan and used the names Samaria and Judea, but no West Bank. Likewise, no Gaza Strip. No such thing in history. Indeed, the boundary around Gaza to this very day, this artificial rectangle 25 miles long by 5 to 8 miles wide, is nothing but the ceasefire line drawn in 1949 around the Egyptian army force that had come up from Egypt along the coast intent on overrunning Tel Aviv, but was stopped by the heroics of the kibbutzniks at Yad Mordechai. Likewise, the name East Jerusalem. For those who don't know, even the embarrassingly politically correct Jerusalem Post does, when using the term East Jerusalem, uses a lowercase e, because Israel does not recognize such a separate jurisdiction. Among world anti-Jewry, though, uniformly, the world today speaks of East, capital E, Jerusalem, as if it was a separate body from Jerusalem, as East St. Louis, Illinois, is separate from St. Louis, Missouri. Notice, too, the use of the word annexed. In 1967, Israel annexed East Jerusalem, so that's a second lie in this three-word string. It's just not true. The city was reunited. As in 1990, Berlin was reunited. West Germany did not annex East Berlin. It tore down the wall between the two parts of the cities. And that isn't here in 1967. Since 1949, there had been a wall dividing the city. An ugly, jerry-built divider, I remember it. And with the victory, local Israelis by themselves began to tear it down. And here, as in the standard way of thinking about the Arabs' endless war against us, Israel captured and annexed. It didn't reunite. West Bank, Gaza Strip, East Jerusalem, all verbal artifacts of the Arab-Muslim inability to let Jews live free, free of their sub-civilized, totalitarian, and socially barbaric culture. So let's see, already mentioned, I think, was the attempt along the light rail yesterday in Jerusalem by a homicidal Hamite to stab a young female Semite, anti-Semitic man, but was foiled. An alert policeman shot him in the leg. And this morning, again, an Arab in a car tried to murder Jewish soldiers with his car at the Gush Etzion intersection and jump out with a knife, but he, too, was shot dead. Well, that junction is bristling now with security cameras, and I'm sure the footage will be analyzed and learned from. It's becoming really a sport with these people, I think, these Jew-killing escapades, the latest wrinkle in the attempts of Mad Dog Goyim to murder Jews. Like the rise and fall of hemlines, the Arabs here are forever tinkering with the technique, the fashion. This ramming and knifing combo is an interesting innovation, which forces us to use our Yiddish cups, our Jewish heads, and today we read of a new innovation or new invention by the IDF. Neck armor. Looks like a collar on a turtleneck sweater, which is meant to protect our soldiers assigned to this duty from these stabbers, who it is now clear, by the way, have been taught or are self-taught via the internet the proper Jew-killing knife technique. Doctors tending the Jewish victims have become assured that these stabbers know what they're doing. These are not random strikes on the body. They know just where to target the Jewish devil's corpus. And make no mistake, these suicide killers, no different than suicide bombers, look upon their victims as devils, as agents of Satan, and nothing could be holier than killing them. This is what Allah wants, and in compensation, the stabber rockets into Muslim paradise, where just about every vice forbidden a believer in this life is there. For example, the streams in Muslim paradise don't run with water but wine, and one can drink it and stay drunk all the time 24/7 as one repeatedly and violently rapes virgins for all eternity. And let's not forget the other attempts to kill us here today, yesterday, from the north. 2 weeks ago, Samir Kuntar, the Lebanese Druze, was also shipped off to paradise, and ever since Hezbollah, the Party of God in southern Lebanon, has vowed revenge, as they always do. One never hears a peace plan from Hezbollah. How Hezbollah seems opposed to installing peace between Israel and Lebanon, because that's not on their agenda. So yesterday, Hezbollah set off some humongous bomb as two IDF D9 armored bulldozers drove by the border. Some damage to those monster vehicles, but not to the soldiers inside, I think, thank God. And in immediate response, the IDF fired off artillery shells over the line at Hezbollah positions. Farmers on the Golan remained advised not to enter their orchards along the frontier, but otherwise people in the Finger of the Galilee, as we call it, and on the Golan are told to go about their business as usual. This is our fate. Hamas in the south, Hamas-type suicide freaks in Yosh, Hezbollah in the north. Actually, I feel kind of grateful with news items like these. And let's not forget the murderer last Friday in Tel Aviv, still on the loose, an Arab with citizenship for a change. I still feel kind of grateful when I consider all this violence, but then compare it to what's going on in our neighboring countries here in this light. This aggression against us is evidence by its minor key. What a peaceful island of civilization we live in. These strikes, when compared to what goes on all around us in the bigger picture, as terrible as they are for the individuals, are pinprick irritants. Consider daily events in Libya, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen. And the Saudis and the Iranians are now on the verge of major violence over events of the past few days. They have been fighting a proxy war with each other in Yemen, backing the two different sides, and they differ over their support in other countries for the sides. But now, I guess, no more proxies. They stand face to face, snarling at each other, breaking diplomatic relations, violence. And one major connecting thread, really, the major catalyst for all the violence around here, it can be described or explained in two words only. Barack Obama. What this bull in a China shop has done since he took office is shatter what stability existed around here. He and Hillary triggered the destruction of Gaddafi's state, and since he came down, the fighting between the factions has never ended, with major gains for the Muslim Brotherhood. Next door in Egypt, Obama, either a conscious villain or ignorant fool, thought it would be a good idea to topple Mubarak and install the Muslim Brotherhood, those perennial antagonists of Egyptian governments since the end of the monarchy in 1952. As a poorly educated fool, Obama likely thought democracy is what Egypt needs, and never mind that half the people there are illiterate and therefore uneducated and ill-equipped to vote intelligently. But never mind, if they want the Brotherhood, it's their democratic right, this idiot likely thought. He also taught the entire region, certainly the apostates, that he is no friend anymore when it comes to Iran. He said that, for example, if Assad, protege of Iran, uses poison gas, that's a red line. But when he did, Assad did, Obama turned away. And his implicit threat evaporated like water pipe smoke. Iran did not want Obama to do anything against its client Assad, and so Obama did not. In the spring of 2009, when Obama was in office for just a few months, Iran went to the polls. The mullahs were outvoted, so they stole the results. People protested, people were killed, and Obama said nothing. And why? Because Iran is the only country in the region with smarts enough to build an atomic bomb and its delivery systems and menace Israel. They just tested another long-range rocket, another clear violation of the UN Security Council resolution, which should halt Obama's Iran deal, but of course he will do nothing. And the upshot? The anxiety in Saudi Arabia that has erupted with the realization that in its confrontation with Iran, the Sunni Islamic homeland versus the eternal Shiite heretics in Iran, Saudi Arabia can no longer count on the U.S. for support, as the U.S. came to Kuwait's rescue in 1991. Saudi Arabia is now on its own, and the current result is the current flare-up. The beheading of a Shiite leader in Saudi Arabia humiliated the Iranians, whose yarbos burned down the Saudi Arabia this weekend. What a mess. Stock markets opened, nervous about the oil supply out of Saudi Arabia and Iran. What a mess. And the trail leads directly to that anti-Semitic imposter in the Oval Office.
Thank you.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Well, we opened with that lovely little story of the anti-Jew cancer that affects UN bureaucrats, especially one Muslim ones like this guy, as another manifestation of the eternal plague of anti-Jewitis of the mind. And here's another manifestation of the effects of Islam's menace against Jews. Shurat HaDin, the law firm here run by the terrific Nitzana Darshan Leitner, who has pioneered attacking terrorists in courts of law, they ran a covert experiment on Facebook that proved its bias against the Jews, toward the anti-Jew Arabs, hostility to Israel. They created two phony pages, one pro-Israel and one pro-Palestinian, and anti the other. Both were posted with messages advertising its propaganda for its own side and against the other side, with Facebook shutting down the pro-Israel, anti-Palestinian page while doing nothing to its mirror image. Shurat HaDin is now suing Facebook for its bias and complaining into Alia that Facebook is allowing Islamist radicals to recruit terrorists on Facebook and to plan terror attacks on its pages. If this is true, and I have no reason to doubt Shurat HaDin, how are we to understand this? Why is this happening? A few possibilities. The people at the very top are unaware of what their lower-level staffers are doing online, or it is policy. And if this is so, it may be because the company really believes in the cause of the Ancient Ones, or because it's frightened of the Muslims. Close down a jihadi site and prepare for retaliation. Bombs planted at headquarters. Truck bombs as powerful as Timothy McVeigh's, which blew the whole side of a modern office building off and killed hundreds of people. For sure, as I note in my book, newspaper correspondents in the Middle East have been threatened by Muslims. The PLO did that in Lebanon in the 1970s and 80s to get the coverage it wanted. Certain journalists had to flee Lebanon after being threatened. And now, on the Gatestone site today, Judith Bergman has reported that a solution was tabled in the House of Representatives 2 weeks ago after the San Bernardino horror, signed by 82 Democrats, quote, condemning violence, bigotry, and hateful rhetoric towards Muslims in the United States. The victims of anti-Muslim hate crimes and rhetoric have faced physical, verbal, and emotional abuse because they were Muslim or believed to be Muslim, and the House of Representatives expresses its condolences for the victims of anti-Muslim hate crimes, close quote. And never mind, as Bergman points out, of all the hate crimes reported in 2014 in the states, only 16.1% were anti-Muslim. Over 56% were anti-Jew. But of course, the House has no resolution protesting that reality. Bergman sees this as the first step of outlawing criticism of Islam, which has a terrible precedent. How ironic. We are just around the corner from the anniversary of the Charlie Hebdo horror and the chilling truth that Obama refused to join the world in condemning that massacre. And why? Well, at the UN, one that fall, or the fall before, during his annual speech, Obama said he didn't want to live in a world that tolerates slandering the prophet. Of course he refused to participate in that arguably world's greatest ever political manifestation in Paris, because the Charlie Hebdo massacre came precisely from insulting the slander and slandering the prophet. So this Obama guy is a menace. Today, his imperial edict concerns guns, and I really hope there are wise men in Washington who care enough about Israel to be on guard. During this villain's last year in office, I think he is perfectly capable of throwing Israel under the bus, throwing Israel to the dogs in the Security Council. He has already done something equally as awful, I think. He has written a check for $150 billion to be given to his protege, Iran, and also signed off on their building an atomic bomb. Since he's done that, he's capable of anything. So it's not too soon, I think, for the Israel lobby, what's left of it, to start rallying friends in Congress to draft a similar resolution declaring any anti-Israel move by this president in the UN during his last year in office will be disowned by the Congress of the People of the United States of America. Because this is one scary dude.
אדון עולם אשר מלך בטרם כל יציר נברא לעת נשא בחפצו כל אזי מלך אזי מלך שמו נקרא אדון עולם אשר מלך בטרם כל יציר נברא לעת נעשה בחפצו כל אזי מלך שמו נקרא ואחרי ככלות הכל לבדו ימלוך ימלוך נורא חבלי ביום צרה והוא ניסי כן הוא ניסי ומנוסי מנת כוסי ביום מקרא אדון העולם אשר
Okay, that's it for this Tuesday evening. I'll be back, God willing, on Thursday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz HaKodesh.